You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is the American Hour, and I am Commander Tom Garcia. And, of course, I'm helped out by my lovely co-host, Paula Lozon. How are you tonight, Paula?
Doing excellent, and it's an overcast 35 here in the Boston area. And I see that Santorum, your man there, won Missouri, Minnesota, and Colorado, and question was asked of him this morning while he was on Morning Joe whether or not Romney is now damaged goods politically, and he is saying that Romney is not the best choice to go up against Barack Obama because the central issue of the day being that, you know, he's government depressing and he's taking our freedoms and our religious freedoms, our economic freedoms, our First Amendment rights, and he tramples upon our First Amendment regularly is what's being said.
Well, you know, a lot of that is being based. And, of course, yes, congratulations, Rick Santorum, and I knew he was going to do well. And, boy, I'm impressed that he won those three states. I can tell you this, the campaign, here's positive vibes. People in Florida were wondering, what should we do with all the materials we have left over, the signs and other things, you know, any bumper stickers that we may have, et cetera. And do you know what the Rick Santorum campaign told all of us in the Florida, you know, Rick Santorum campaign said, hang on to that stuff. You're going to need it for the general election. Now that's some good solid pomp there. So, and it's true. They did. They said, no, don't try and ship them off to other states with upcoming primaries. You just keep them because you're going to need them in the general election. So I think that was foreshadowing of what's coming. We'll see. We'll see. But he did quite well. And I know the liberal pundits and, you know, all of them, actually, even the establishment pundits, oh, well, you know, there's a reason why he won those. Ah, well, you know, he still doesn't have any delegates from those. On and on and on. It's such a bunch of baloney, you know. But in any case, yeah, he did well. And we'll see what that translates into in a few more states. I think he'll be able to keep this momentum going because he has the right message, and it's not the same message as Romney. I mean, Romney says things, but the problem is he has too long a history of doing other things differently. So, and of course, people are going to go after Santorum for some of his votes. And I've seen some blatant lies out there, absolute blatant lies about how he voted when he was in the Senate. And they're not true. They're just not true. And you don't always know what's going on with some of these things. I give the example all the time that in the latest defense authorization bill, if I had been in Congress, I would have voted no. Now, if I hadn't spent 22 years in the Navy, people might attempt to say, oh, Tom, you don't support the troops. Well, that would be a blatant lie. I actually do support the troops. What I don't support is trampling our Constitution, which is precisely what is in that defense authorization bill when it comes to detaining U.S. citizens. And I didn't spend 22 years in the Navy and take an oath of office that said I will support and defend and bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution to allow that to happen. So you can't absolutely know what everybody's vote is, but there are plenty of votes that I know that Rick was involved in the Senate that are considered questionable, and as I have dug into every single one of them, I find out there's a very legitimate reason. So the bottom line is he's not saying anything different than he used to say, and so that's one of the reasons that I got on board. The other thing is I know that of all the candidates, the libtards just hate him the most. Oh, that will be so sweet to see him in the White House and these liberals just squirming and just hating this country even more because of a social conservative in the White House. So it's about time we're going to go from one end of the spectrum. I wouldn't say one end of the spectrum to the other, but we're going to go from a person who attacks religion, who has disdain for religion, and hates our Constitution. And we're going to get into that in this very show tonight. But if you want to follow us in social networking, you've got to get on Twitter and follow The American Hour. Just look for search The American Hour on Twitter. On Facebook, we are The American Hour Radio Show page. And you can probably get there even just from going and finding me, Tom Garcia, on Facebook. And what else? Paula, you're the megawatt queen on Twitter. And I don't know if you want anybody going to your Facebook page or not, if you put any stuff out there, but do you have a Facebook page that people can go to?
My Facebook page is just Paula Lozon. It's my regular personal Facebook page. I mean, I post stuff from time to time. Sometimes I'll post it publicly, but most of the time it's only to my friends.
Okay. Well, you post stuff on the American Hour page, and that's good enough, and people can find that stuff
I do.
Yeah. So, in any case, there are some things that have occurred in the news, all regarding the Constitution. And we're going to kind of step through that stuff. Later on in the show, we may be joined by Jill Trammell. And she is going to be taking up the second hour tonight. I mean, normally we go for about an hour, but tonight we're going to go 2 hours. The American Hour is going to end just before 8. And Jill Trammell and her media promotions, military media promotions company, is going to be on doing some interviews. And that's cool. You're not going to want to miss that, because she's going to have some folks talking about battlefield. Now, these are all vets and people that make gear for our soldiers to wear in the battlefield. And they're going to talk about also our helicopters with, white crosses on them or Red Cross markings. They're still getting shot at anyways, but because they are medevac helicopters and or Red Cross, utilized by the Red Cross, not utilized by the Red Cross, but are on board, they can't have supposedly armed soldiers on there unless somebody needs to be medevaced out and through some tough territory. And that's causing a lot of problems. I'm having to wait maybe 30, 40 minutes while some guy is bleeding to death on the helicopter. So we need to stop that right away. That practice has got to end. And they'll be talking about that stuff tonight, so you don't want to miss that right after our show. But let's get on to the main event. And the title of tonight's show is Barack Obama's Dream Constitution and Bill of Rights. There's been a lot of talk about the Bill of Rights, and a New York Times article just came out here a few days ago, and I'm going to read a few excerpts from it. It is titled, We the People Lose Appeal with People Around the World. Now, Paula, I find it very hard, very, very hard to understand how countries and oppressed people around the world don't like the concept of we the people. We the people are in charge. Does that seem odd to you that other countries go, we don't care so much about we the people. We're more about government. We like to be we the government. Does that sound odd to you?
Well, of course it does. And for some reason or other today when I was watching the news, I kind of noticed that seems to be the path that we're going on, where my opinion is that the government seems to be regulating everything that we're doing. And Mike Barnicle said it perfectly this morning. Again, I bring up Morning Joe because it's one of my favorite shows, where the government regulates, the part about the religious freedoms and abortion and whatnot, where you could go to, St. Elizabeth's Parish on one side, and the government, which is we're Roman Catholic Church, and the government says, whatever you do in there, whatever you think in there, that's your thing. But if you go to the, St. Elizabeth's practicing Catholic hospital across the street, the government is going to regulate what you think. And
yeah.
I don't know. For whatever reason, I feel that maybe because I wasn't paying attention or there's just so much going on, something seems to have gotten lost along the way, where I'm catching more that the government regulates what our thought process is and what we can do. And I don't believe that that's what the country was founded upon. I thought we were supposed to make our own decisions, and that was...
Yeah.
That was it. That was the final say, but that just doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, our country was founded on individual liberty. Individual liberty. And you bring up a good
point. Okay.
I mean, I'm looking at the Declaration of Independence right here. But, this really the third paragraph, I guess, if you call it that. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Now, there you have it. That's the purpose of government, to secure those rights. That's what our founders believed in. But what we're seeing is this trend towards government creating all kinds of non-natural rights. Here is how you can know what is a right, a God-given right, and not a God-given right, Paul. For example, the freedom of speech or life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are God-given, unalienable rights. Is a house a God-given right? Well, the way you can figure out if a particular right is God-given is if there was no government, zero government, period, would you have these things? Would you have these rights? Would you have the right to a job? Would you have the right to a house? No, nobody's there to guarantee it for you. You would have to do that for yourself. So those are not God-given rights. But life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, there does not have to be a government for you to have those things. Those are God-given. So that is the difference. And in this article, I'm just going to read a couple things here and then let you comment on it. But it says there are lots of possible reasons. The United States Constitution is terse and old, and it guarantees relatively few rights. We could change the title of this from "We the People Loses Appeal with the People Around the World" to "The Ten Commandments Loses Appeal with People Around the World." And there are lots of possible reasons. It's terse and old and guarantees relatively few rights. Now, what was the purpose of the Ten Commandments? It was to protect us from human nature, really the human nature of ourselves. So what was the purpose of the Constitution? To protect us from human nature. And what human nature is that? That men and women of power in government tend to go the direction of tyranny. And that is the purpose of the Constitution. But see, for the libtard, liberal, lefty, flat earth, no growth people out there, that's just not good enough. God-given rights? No, we got to have a lot more stuff than that. We want other people's stuff, and there's a way to get it. The way we get other people's stuff is we create rights that we demand and the government promises they'll give to us. So, you know, here's one example. I know everybody's probably thinking about Greece right now, but this article continues on and says the rights of the guaranteed in the American Constitution are parsimonious by international standards, and they are frozen in amber. Oh, my gosh, that's so terrible, isn't it, Paula? As Sanford Levinson wrote in 2006, our undemocratic constitution, the U.S. Constitution, is the most difficult to amend of any constitution currently existing in the world today. No, duh. It's that way for a reason, Mr. Associate Professor Moron. It is hard to amend so that we can't willy-nilly make changes that destroy our liberty and our freedom. Now, another comment in this article was that Canadian law serves as a source of inspiration for many countries around the world. The new study also suggests that the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, adopted in 1982, may be more influential than its American counterpart. That could be. If that's what people around the world want, is a government to do everything for them, then absolutely. But let's take a look at one of the guaranteed rights in Canada, health care. Now, I have very personal experience with that from my wife and her family. Her mother is going in to have her knee replaced a second time because they screwed it up the first time. You know why they screwed it up the first time? They cut corners because they don't have enough money to cover all of this stuff. So they're rationing as much as they can. Oh, and by the way, her other knee has to be redone as well. Speaking of knees, my sister-in-law in Canada has to have her knee redone because, once again, they cut corners and did the absolute bare minimum. Do you know when she needed to get her knee MRI'd, she was going to have to wait 6 months for an MRI? I mean, wow. I just have to go see my doctor tomorrow and say, hey, I want an MRI. My elbow really hurts. He writes it. I go next door to another facility, or I go down the street 5 blocks, and there's a place to give me an MRI. So you think that – so they've got the guaranteed – they have guaranteed health care in Canada, and yet it's crappy. Now – if you want good health care, there are different levels of health care in Canada where then you get to start paying and you get to – but here's the bottom line. It's a process of spreading the wealth, and it doesn't work well. If everybody just said, oh, I'm just going to take the free health care, and but I'm not going to, you know, go pay for any – they would be so overwhelmed that they couldn't handle it. So it's a terrible system. So that's what you get when you have, but we're going to get into some other things here. Now, one of the comments, this was from Judith in Bronx, Bronxville, New York. She said, rights do not impose obligations on other citizens. For example, my right to free speech doesn't obligate you to provide me with a venue. My right to bear arms doesn't obligate you to buy me ammunition. A right to health care or housing, however, would obligate someone else to pay for it if I couldn't do so. A right to a job would obligate somebody to hire me. These things, desirable though they may be, cannot be rights, and that's the real problem. Every time governments guarantee these things, what happens? They find eventually they can't afford them, just like all of these economies in Europe are struggling because they're big entitlement states. They're socialist entitlement states. But that's where we need to go. So we get these geniuses commenting on how oppressive our system is. I can tell you this, Paul. I travel all over South America and Latin America. You won't walk through a neighborhood anywhere there, like my neighborhood, that almost nobody has fences up. Everybody's got big yards. Everybody's got nice homes. And yet no barbed wire, no big fences, no broken glass on the fences, no bars over their windows. Everywhere down there has that kind of, those kind of homes, or they have hired security. If they're living up on a hilltop and they don't have that, but then they've got armed guards there, that's everywhere. Is that freedom? No. We have the kind of freedom and liberty that nobody has. And yet we've got these morons that think they know better, and that's the problem with government trying to give us these so-called rights. We have to give up some freedom, and I'll get to that in a little while. You have to give up freedom to get these rights. You're handing the government the ability to start making decisions for you. And if you don't like the decisions, it's too late. It's too late. So moving on to tell me what you think about that, Paul.
Like I said, Tom, I think that we're beginning to have a problem in this country with things and the fact that other people in other countries are fine with the governments making decisions for them, it just doesn't fly with me.
Yeah, exactly. And that really is the problem. The problem with people like Barack Obama is they always feel that government knows better. Government knows better than we do. The problem is every time that happens, it doesn't work out. For example, Benjamin Franklin used to tell us that the reason mankind has a natural inclination towards a kingly government, and of course, you know, we've got different types of governments now that you could call kingly governments that, you know, are a dictatorship or, you know, whatever, some form of a monarch, a very highly centralized government, is because it creates an illusion of equality among the masses. And what are we always talking about here these days? You know, it's not fair that Warren Buffett's secretary pays lower taxes than he does, which it turns out to not be true, a lower tax rate. But why is it that the left, instead of saying, well, then let's lower her tax rate, no, let's raise Warren Buffett's tax rate, because that's only fair. It's this illusion of fairness. If we had just one very beneficent monarch, king, ruling over the United States of America, he'd make good decisions for all of us. And then we wouldn't have to be involved in the process, and we'll just live happily ever after, and he'll make all the decisions for us and tell us what we have to do and not do. That's kind of what the masses would like, but it never works that way. It never works that way. And what is it we tried to get away from? And there are plenty of British citizens, including John Adams, who liked the British government and liked being a British citizen. But the way we got treated here in America, because we weren't back home in England, was horrible. And it just goes to show what a dictator, what a highly centralized government that controls everything will do to you eventually. You won't like it. So along with this trend of bashing our Constitution, we have Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice, telling Egypt, don't look at our Constitution. She was being interviewed for some Egyptian TV, and she said this. She said, I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a Constitution in the year 2012. I might look to the Constitution of South Africa. Huh. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights and an independent judiciary. Notice how she gets that in her, an independent judiciary. You know what an independent judiciary is? A judiciary that is not accountable. That's what she thinks is just great. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done, much more recent than the U.S. Constitution. Well, you know what? Her fondness for the South Africa Constitution comes from the fact that their Bill of Rights includes welfare state guarantees like the right to housing and the right to health care. Well, we just talked about how that works in Canada. Let's talk about Bolivia. When Evo Morales got elected, he promised everybody would have a house. Now, there were a lot of poor people that didn't have homes, but he promised everybody would have a house. Guess what? There wasn't enough money for that, to do that. So his next move was to say, well, I didn't mean like you'd have everybody would have a freestanding house. There are people that have homes with extra bedrooms, bedrooms they're not using. We can move a poor family into that bedroom, and that will be their house, and they will own it. How do you think that went over with the people? Not good. So he made this promise of a right to housing, and he can't fulfill it. And he hasn't been able to fulfill it to this day and won't, I guarantee you, be able to fulfill it. That's the problem with government creating so-called rights. They really are not just rights, but rather a transfer of wealth. Now, let's play let me make sure I check my notes here. I didn't miss anything. We're going to play a clip by Barack Obama, and I can only take so much, so I didn't put the whole thing in there. But in it, he starts off talking about the Constitution and a blind spot. And I'll get to that in a moment. But let's play the clip and hear what our Marxist-in-chief had to say about the Constitution. And this is back when he was being interviewed, I think maybe as a state senator, in 2001. Maybe he wasn't even an elected official at that point, but I don't think he was. He was not. But here is our trusty Marxist president on talking about the Constitution.
To that extent, as radical as I think people try to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted, and Warren Court interpreted it in the same way that generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf.
Wow. Well, there's all kinds of things to comment on that, but earlier in it he talked about a blind spot, and what he was talking about was the rights of blacks in America when the Constitution was written. And I'll say this, he's either really stupid or he's being very disingenuous. We had states that had slavery, and not all of the founders were slave owners. That most weren't. But there would never, ever, ever, ever be a union if something was put in the Constitution to abolish slavery. The slave states would not have joined. Now, what would have happened if there had been no union? Well, there'd be no United States of America. But would slavery have ended earlier or later with no union? It would have gone on much, much longer, Paula. In fact, it was the union that fought with itself, within itself in the Civil War, to end it. If there were no union, there's no union to fight itself. So it would have just kept going on for quite some time. So he is completely distorting the situation. But what did get put into the Constitution laid the groundwork for abolishing slavery. It was there. But they never were going to get all of the states, when I say states, the colonies, together to form a union so that one day they could abolish it. So he really is honestly being very dishonest about that statement. But as he then continues on and talks about the Warren Court, and we were talking about really the civil rights movement, but when he talks about the constraints placed on our government or even the Supreme Court on what they can do, Paula, there are constraints placed on the government because we didn't want the government to do to us what it did before. It's that simple. He said it tells us what the states can't do and what the federal government can't do. Actually, there's very little in the Constitution that says what the federal government can't do and what the states can't do. Most of the Constitution tells us what powers, what specific enumerated powers our government has. Then he goes on to say it's essentially a document full of negative rights. Now, he calls himself a constitutional professor. This is Constitution 101. So he's either lying to us once again, and we know he does that frequently, or he's a complete idiot. He really is. And he's not worthy of calling himself a constitutional professor. Here's why. A negative liberty is not a bad liberty, Paula. A negative liberty is one that isn't expressed, in other words. But it means you have it. Because it's not expressed, you have it. For example, could we have put every possible liberty in the Constitution? Like, for example, Paula, you have the right to buy a house. You have the right to buy a car. You have the right to fish on Sunday. You have the right to walk down any street you choose that hasn't been closed off, you know, for whatever. On and on and on. No, it would be an endless document. So the intent of the Constitution is this. If it doesn't say it, you, Paula, can do it. If it does say something that you can't do, which it doesn't say anything about the people, but it does say the government, what the government can do, but the government can only do what the Constitution says. Those are positive liberties, if you will, or positive enumerations of power. But to say that it's full of negative liberties, that's an outright lie. And you can't write down a negative liberty. Once you write it down, it becomes a positive liberty. It's negative because it's not in there. So he said it's full of negative liberties. It's devoid of negative liberties. That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of the individual liberty and freedom that the Constitution guarantees to everybody. It doesn't spell out our specific liberties. So, I mean, do you have the right to buy a house? Yeah, absolutely. Does that need to be spelled out by the government? I don't want the government to have anything to do with that. So that's where he gets it completely, absolutely wrong. He really either doesn't understand the Constitution or he's lying to us, which it's a toss-up whether he's dumb or lying to us, because we know both are true. But now let's get into what I talked about in the opening of this, the Obama's dream Constitution. His dream Constitution and dream Bill of Rights. You know that Franklin Delano Roosevelt attempted to institute a second Bill of Rights, whereas our first Bill of Rights talks about God-given natural rights. The second Bill of Rights was going to guarantee things like a job and a house and a good salary and all that kind of stuff. So as much as the president has bragged about how he's going to finish what FDR started, his regulatory czar, Cass Sunstein, even wrote in a book outlining how government, not we the people, but government, will finally be free of the constraints of the Constitution. The second Bill of Rights, Sunstein's thesis is that there are no God-given or natural rights, but basically rights that government gives or takes away according to its own expediency and caprice. Well, let's just get an idea of what FDR's second Bill of Rights was, and then we're going to compare that, Paula, to an actual constitution that did have these rights in it. And I suppose that the South African constitution has some of these rights as well, but let's see what was in FDR's second Bill of Rights, the right to a useful and remunerative job in the industries or shops or farms or mines of the nation. The right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation. The right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return which will give him and his family a decent living. The right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies at home or abroad. I don't know how you can guarantee that about abroad. But the right of every family to a decent home. The right to adequate medical care and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health. The right to adequate protection from economic fears of old age, sickness, accident, and unemployment. And finally, the right to a good education. Now, don't those all sound good, Paula?
Yes, they do. They do.
Except, how do we pay for all those? There's a price to pay, and I'm going to explain to you how you have to give up your freedom in order for the government to provide you with those. You become a slave to the government. Now, before I do that, I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to come back to FDR, so I'm going to give you some specific examples of countries in the world today that guarantee some of these very things. You'll be surprised at who some of these countries are. You might be thinking about Australia or Canada and European countries. We'll see. Okay? But here is Obama's dream constitution. I'm going to read it to you because this is a real constitution. I'm a real constitution. And I'm going to bet every libtard out there right now listening would go, yeah, what's wrong with that, Tom? Okay, here we go. Citizens are equal before the law without distinction of origin, social or property status, race or nationality, sex, education, language, attitude to religion, type and nature of occupation, domicile, or other status. Wow, we're all equal before the law. Women and men have equal rights. Citizens of different races and nationalities have equal rights. Citizens, here's a good one for all you illegal immigrants out there that I know are not listening to the show. Citizens of other countries and stateless persons in the country are guaranteed the rights and freedoms provided by law, including the right to apply to a court and other state bodies for the protection of their personal, property, family, and other rights. The government grants the right of asylum to foreigners persecuted for defending the interests of the working people and the cause of peace, or for participation in the revolutionary and national liberation movement, or for progressive, social, and political, scientific, and other creative activity. Sounds pretty good so far, doesn't it, Paula? I mean, this is what the left wants. They want these things to be guaranteed rights, and other countries have forged ahead of us while we just sit in the Stone Age. Citizens enjoy in the full social, economic, political, and personal rights and freedoms proclaimed and guaranteed by the Constitution. The system ensures enlargement of the rights and freedoms of citizens and continuous improvement in their living standards as social, economic, and cultural development programs are fulfilled. Does that sound good? Constant improvement in their living standards. Wow. And we're going to see that this country absolutely lived up to those continuous improvements. Citizens have the right to work, that is, to guaranteed employment and pay in accordance with the quantity and quality of their work. So in other words, if you're a hard worker, that's what the president's always saying, if you're out there working and working hard, you deserve quality pay and not below the state established minimum, including the right to choose their trade or profession, type of job and work in accordance with their inclinations, abilities, training, and education with due account of the needs of society. Ooh, there's a little caveat. You get to choose what job you want to do, but with due account to the needs of the society. Now, who's going to make that decision what the needs of the society is, Paula? Not you, not me.
No.
Government's going to make that decision. But anyways, it still sounds pretty good. I'm sure government won't do anything bad, wouldn't make me do a job I wouldn't want to do. But citizens have the right to rest and leisure. Oh, my gosh, that sounds perfect. I like rest and leisure. Citizens have the right to health protection. I mean, that's what Obamacare is doing us, health protection. Citizens have the right to maintenance in old age and sickness and in the event of complete or partial disability or loss of the breadwinner. Citizens have the right to housing. Citizens have the right to education. Citizens have the right to enjoy cultural benefits. This is sounding like utopia, Paula. Doesn't this sound like some form of utopia on Earth? I can hardly wait to find out what country this is because I want to move there. Citizens, in accordance with the aims of building this nation, are guaranteed freedom of scientific, technical, and artistic work. Okay, so you're guaranteed with the aim of building the nation. This freedom is ensured by broadening scientific research, encouraging invention and innovation, and developing literature and the arts. The state provides the necessary material conditions for this and support for voluntary societies and unions of workers in the arts, organizes introduction of inventions and innovations in production and other spheres of activity. Citizens are guaranteed freedom of conscience. Oh, what does that mean? Well, it means if you feel like today, for example, if you're told you work in a hospital and you're told you have to hand out or prescribe the morning after pill or contraception, but you're Catholic, you're free to say no. That's what this article here says. Citizens are guaranteed freedom of conscience. That is the right to profess or not to profess any religion and to conduct religious worship or atheistic propaganda. Incitement of hostility or hatred on religious grounds is prohibited. Gosh, that sounds better than here. The family enjoys the protection of the state. Marriage is based on the free consent of the woman and the man. The spouses are completely equal in their family relations. The state helps the family by providing and developing a broad system of child care institutions, by organizing and improving communal services and public catering, by paying grants on the birth of a child, by providing children's allowances. I wouldn't want to have to provide any more children's allowances. By providing children's allowances and benefits for large families and other forms of family allowances and assistance. Military service in the ranks of the armed forces is an honorable duty. Okay, that's good. It is the duty of every citizen to respect the national dignity of other citizens and to strengthen friendship of the nations and nationalities of the multinational state. A citizen is obliged to respect the rights and lawful interests of other persons, to be uncompromising toward antisocial behavior, and to help maintain public order. This sounds like a little bit of a gotcha, though. What defines antisocial behavior? Does that mean not going along with the Constitution or not going along with the government? Oops, could get you thrown in prison, maybe. I don't know. It still sounds like utopia on earth. Citizens are obliged to concern themselves with upbringing of children. Now, this is a good one. To train them for socially useful work and to raise them as worthy members of society. Children are obliged to care for their parents and help them. Citizens are obliged to protect nature and conserve its riches. Wow. That, Paula, I got to say it again. Doesn't that sound like utopia on earth?
It does.
It does. And that is Obama's dream constitution. We've talked about the Bill of Rights, FDR's Bill of Rights. That's his dream Bill of Rights. He really doesn't even like our first Bill of Rights. He likes the government rights. He believes that government, we need a constitution that tells you what government must do. And here it is. Here is the constitution that tells government what it must do for the people. And what wonderful utopian society do you think this constitution belongs to?
No idea, Tom.
I take a wild guess. I mean, really honest. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but you know, I would have had to, you know, think about it a little bit myself and come up with some guesses. But pick three countries that you think might be possibilities.
My gosh, I don't know. Europe, India, Asia. I don't know.
I'll tell you what it was. In the suspense, it was the old Soviet Union.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah. So how did all of these wonderful rights, this utopian society, work out for them, Paula? Horrible. My parents were there teaching at a university for one summer while it was still the Soviet Union. Oh, my gosh, the lack of food. The lack of heating, ability to heat your home in the wintertime, and the treacherousness of the government. The bottom line is, if the government didn't like what you were doing, the government would – these rights were paper rights. They did not actually exist. So the question is, for all of you libtards out here, how do you guarantee that these things won't actually be used against you and that you will actually retain these rights? Guess what? It's our Constitution. Our Constitution, which limits government, puts shackles on government. Any Constitution that takes those shackles off and allows government to do all kinds of things for you is precisely the Constitution that leads to a totalitarian society. So let's back up here and look at a few of these things. And I can tell you just how these don't work out. Citizens of the USSR are guaranteed freedom of conscience. So that is the right to profess or not to profess any religion and to conduct religious worship. There were entire churches that were banned. If you wanted to worship in your way, you had to do it in somebody's basement. Church was, for the most part, banned in Soviet Russia. Yet this is in their constitution. See, here's the problem, Polly. You have to give up too much liberty to get this stuff. For example, the rights to housing. Okay, it says we have the right to a house. It doesn't say what kind of house. Remember, I just told you about Evo Morales guaranteeing housing to everybody. But has he guaranteed a housing to everybody? What he tried to do was take away housing from people that it was their property, that they had worked and earned it. He's going to take – can you imagine having a spare bedroom in your house and a family of five with their chickens and goats moving into that room and it's theirs and they get to do whatever they want in there? Because the government says so? I mean, this is where it goes. This is precisely where it goes. You know, the guarantee of a job. Well, what happened in the Soviet Union? What happens in China? We take a look at your abilities when you're in school, the guaranteed education that you get, and if you're not doing so good, you won't continue on and get a college education. We'll put you to work, and we'll tell you where you're going to work. That's how we guarantee a job to you. It's just like with health care. We guarantee health care, but the only way we can pay for it is to ration it. This is the danger of this kind of constitution, and this is what our president wants for us. His dream constitution is the Soviet constitution. Everything I read in there is what every libtard professes would be good for America. Wow, well, it was good for the Soviet Union, wasn't it? Now let's go back to FDR's Bill of Rights. The right to earn, to provide adequate food, clothing, and recreation. Adequate food. Uh-huh. You know, they have a deal in Venezuela where you're guaranteed milk and bread. You'll never go without food, milk and bread. All you have to do is go to the grocery store and get in line, and you'll be handed it. Your ration for the week. Oops, except on the weeks they don't have any, Paula. Yeah, you're guaranteed it if they have it, but if they don't, sorry, but come back tomorrow. Maybe we'll have some tomorrow.
Yeah, you're out of luck.
Rationing. Rationing. This goes on all over the place. Cuba. Let's talk about Cuba. Talk about. Everybody's the same, though. Everybody's equal there. They have redistributed the wealth to where there is no wealth. And people that I just spoke with a lady the other day, the wife of one pilot I flew with, who had gone back to – she'd been born in Cuba, but, you know, left at the age of four. And she's in her 40s now, and she said, man, I can't believe how just absolutely poor it is there. She doesn't know what it was like before, but I know of a woman who does know what it was, who's probably in her late 50s and does know what it was like when she was there in her 20s. And if you ask her about it, she'll start to cry. So, yeah, these rights, the workers' rights, and these false rights, all they do is destroy a nation. Look at Greece. Oh, they had all kinds of rights, all kinds of guarantees. You know, 4 weeks off every year, vacation, and this entitlement, that entitlement, they're bankrupt. And it doesn't matter. See, that's the thing. It doesn't matter to somebody that's a Marxist socialist. It doesn't matter if the country's bankrupt. It doesn't matter. They're in charge. They're in power. As long as they stay in power. In fact, the more bankrupt the country is, the more control they have over us. The more control they have over us. Until it turns into a situation like, you know, Egypt and, you know, some of these other countries that rebel. So there you go. There is the libtard solution to undoing an oppressive government, a bloody, bloody rebellion. When, in fact, all we have to do is follow our antiquated existing constitution that limits government, stops government from harming us in these very ways, and we don't ever have to go through that again. Now, the president recently, you know, was lamenting that, you know, he's just there are a lot of things that people would like him to get done and he'd like to get done, but the nature of our, you know, government is he just can't get it done. But he's trying. Yeah, that's exactly it. We don't want a president that just starts getting all kinds of things done. The president of the United States has no authority to do any of that, and there's a reason. We broke away from a monarchy, and we don't ever want another king. Just because Obama wants to be king and have that kind of authority doesn't make it right and absolutely will be damaging to the nation. So here's the difference between our Constitution and the other constitutions of the world. Our Constitution guarantees that government will not get in the way of our God-given rights. That's it, period. I'm going to read one more time from the Declaration of Independence. Get my little book out here. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, this is why they formed our government, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. A massive Bill of Rights or massive constitution that guarantees all kinds of rights does not limit government, does not ensure that government protects our God-given rights, but rather takes our God-given rights in order to then provide us with all of the monetary, the temporal, the property rights that God allows us to get on our own. Okay? So, that is the difference between our Constitution and theirs. Ours guarantees God-given rights and limits government. Theirs takes away your God-given rights and expands the role of government to rights that may do you no good, just like that Constitution we just read from the Soviet Union. It gives you non-natural rights, rights that you would never have just naturally on your own. And somebody's got to pay for it. And when there's not enough people to pay for it, the country sinks deeper and deeper and deeper into debt until it eventually defaults or there's a revolution and we start over again. Every country in the world, however they want to put their constitution together, ought to start with our founders' constitution, our original constitution. That's where they should start. They can go from there, but that's the idea, is to secure our liberty and blessings and liberty. And if you want to read that, I've been reading from the Declaration of Independence, but let's take a look at the preamble. We the people of the United States. It doesn't say the government of the United States in order to form a more perfect union. It says we the people establish establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And there you have it. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That's the purpose of our Constitution, to limit government, to ensure that we have our personal liberty and can pass on that same personal liberty and freedom to our children and their children and their children, versus shackle them with debt so that everybody can have a house and a car and a flat screen TV and a job, whether they like the job or not, but we're going to force you to have a job. What if somebody doesn't want to work? Well, they don't have to work. That's the great thing about liberty. You don't have to work. So that is my whole thing on Obama's dream constitution and his dream Bill of Rights. We already have that's already been proposed by FDR, and they're not working anywhere else in the world. Why do you think, Paula, people want to chase after something that doesn't work? It never has worked anywhere else.
Why do I want to think that people want to chase after something that hasn't worked?
Yeah, why are we constantly chasing after failed governments and trying to mimic them? Why? It can't possibly be that any of these folks believe that their way of life is better than ours. You know what it is? They don't like lack of control. They do not like the lack of control. And this is, we've talked about Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals. It's about hating the middle class. They hate the middle class. They say they stand for the middle class, but they want to destroy the middle class. They hate the middle class because the middle class is free to do what it wants. In our way of life, the middle class is free to do what it wants. Work hard and get rich. Not work so hard and enjoy life and relax. Not work at all. They hate that. They hate the freedom. You know, the devil and Christ both had plans. And their goal was to bring back as many souls to God from this life as possible. But Jesus believed in a free agency and that he would lead the way and show people the way and the light so that they would come back on their own. That would make them want to be back in God's presence and do what is right. But the devil's plan, and the reason he got cast out, was he proposed forcing everybody to do what was right, and therefore not a single soul would ever be lost. Well, what's the fun in that? What's the development in that? You know what happens when you force people to do stuff against their will? Eventually, if they ever do get free, they're going to do whatever they want, and they haven't learned a thing. They haven't learned a thing. They've been slaves. So we had a choice between slavery and free agency. That's what we're talking about with our Constitution, free agency versus slavery with other constitutions. All the countries that I've mentioned. There are plenty of countries that people feel quite free there, and they're quite happy. Their constitutions are much more closely aligned to our constitution. But it's the countries that have the socialist, big entitlement, constitution, guaranteed rights that are the ones going down the drain. And somehow, some way, people in this country think that's the direction we ought to go, down the drain, just because it's the right thing to do. It doesn't matter whether it never works. Mm. Anyway. So, Any thoughts on this, and we'll move on to the next thing?
No, unfortunately I don't, because I don't understand the thought process of what people in general are thinking if that's the path that they want to follow for whatever reason. It's as if they're being brainwashed.
Well, it's again, you know, going back to Benjamin Franklin, the masses want somebody to take care of them. And it's people like our wonderful so-called leaders in government that think they know better than us. They know what's best for us. They don't really care whether it's best or not. They just know better than us, and we'd better listen to them. But our Constitution shackles them from just doing whatever they want, and they hate it. They just absolutely hate that. They want to be in control, and they want to make us do things.
Well, what if people just turn around and say that they don't want the government to tell them what to do? Don't you think
that's the thing. They don't ever couch it as government's going to tell you what to do. They couch it as government's going to take care of you. Government's going to take care of you. Well, look at what's going on. Government was going to take care of us with Obamacare. But now government is telling people of various religions that they will provide, birth control, abortion pills, sterilization pills, and treatments, and all that kind of stuff that they adamantly oppose based on their religion. They, in conscience, cannot be involved in that stuff. They cannot be involved in that stuff. I mean, some religions, they believe they'll go to hell if they participate in that. But the government's telling them they must. So now we have government telling you what you will do because it's for your own good, or it's for the good of the masses. Goodbye, liberty. Goodbye, personal freedom. Government knows better than you. And there's a prime example. When we say we want everybody to have health care, which Obamacare doesn't cover everybody, but we want everybody to have health care, we had to now, by passing that law, hand over our personal liberty for them to be able to implement it in the way that they see best. We've told the government, yes, you take over the healthcare industry so that everybody has it, nobody ever has to worry, and you now have the authority to tell us what we can and can't do with our bodies and what we must and must not do as workers in any hospital, private or public. Private or public, every hospital and every healthcare system, in fact, every employer. What if you had employees, Paula, and you wanted to offer them a healthcare plan, but the healthcare plan involves things that go against your conscience? You can't choose a different healthcare plan. You have to choose a healthcare plan that allows these things that violate your religious conscience because the government says so. That's the problem with these Bill of Rights, these second Bill of Rights, FDR's Bill of Rights. Government will now start taking your liberty in order to enforce them and make them happen, all for your own good. And we're no longer a free society and a free people because government now tells us what's best for us.
Well, I have an issue with that. If government thinks that they're going to tell me what's good for me.
Well, they're in the process of doing it right now. They're in the process of doing it right now. And that's why we need to get rid of this president. And, I hate to say it, but I think the Democrat Party has been taken over by the liberal Marxist left. They're not the Democrat Party I knew growing up.
Oh, dear Lord.
Well, I've got a few things I've Twittered out recently. So, folks, go to the American Hour Twitter because you won't want to miss some of the stuff I put out here. But I'll just go through a few of these. Some of these have links to articles about the issue. But one was Bill Mayer. Here's what I had to say. Bill Mayer is the kind of guy I either felt sorry for or beat up in high school. Nothing he says is funny unless you hate America. Does anyone actually watch or listen to Bill the Complete Loser Mayer? When did stupidity become funny? I've never laughed at watching that guy. He's become such hardcore leftist over the years, but even back when he wasn't quite so politically oriented, I never thought the guy was funny at all. At all. I don't know how he gets jobs. I don't know how he gets work. It's just not even funny. Even if you agree with his line of thought on liberalism, he's not funny. It's just that simple. He's not funny. Congressman Alan West, walked out on the immoral in chief's disgusting campaign speech at Perk Breakfast. Actually, no, it wasn't him. It was a different congressman. I apologize, but there's a link to that article. In fact, let's take a look and see what the immoral in chief had to say at this prayer breakfast. But in any case, religious voters are flee Democrat Party and the immoral in chief. Immoral in chief's attacks on religion, a turning point. I think this really is going to be a turning point. There already sounds that the Obama administration is going to backtrack on this, forcing Catholics and other people of various religions to have to deal with contraception, birth control pills, abortion pills, abortions, etc. Because they made a mistake. They've woken a sleeping religious giant, and they're going to pay a heavy, heavy price for this. It was Phil Gingrich walked out when Obama, at the National Prayer Breakfast, starts giving a stump speech. He was disturbed and offended by the president's use of prayer and reflection to talk about what he's been trying to do. And they don't have the president's quotes here, but I remember that he started talking about, you know, well, Christ would want us to ensure that the poor are taken care of and provide housing and guarantees and on and on. First of all, Christ never forced anybody to do anything. We've already talked about that with free agency. It was all about free agency. He told you what was right, and it was up to you then to decide. Christ never took anything from anybody and gave it to somebody else. He never, ever talked about redistributing wealth. He said you would be well to redistribute your own wealth in the name of charity, but he never forced anybody or took any. And that's what the president wants to do. He wants to force us to do what is right. Now, remember, we go back to the analogy between the devil and Christ. There were two plans there. The devil was going to force everybody to do what was right, and Christ believed in free agency. We got a president that wants to force everybody to do what is right and doesn't believe in free agency. So, yeah, that's why I call him the immoral in chief. He's a little bit closer to acting like Satan than he is of Christ. And then he had to talk about that at the National Prayer Breakfast. That's why that guy got up and left. I've got a link to an article about when the incompetent in chief came into office, what things were actually like when he took over. And he said he inherited all this. Oh, it was terrible. And not true. The liar in chief strikes again. He's helping with manufacturing jobs. I got an article link right there that shows you why that's not true. Absolutely not true. I retweet a lot of stuff from other people as well that I follow. I follow some pretty good people, but we are just about out of time here. So Jill Fowles coming up here on the show, folks, with her next hour, and you're not going to want to miss it. I'm going to see if I can pull up the press on that. Yes, we go. Here we go. It's the Jill Tramiel Patriots Promotion Hour. Jill Tramiel's Patriots Promotions team is providing opportunities for talented Patriots corporations and veteran nonprofits to execute winning marketing campaigns. Jill's guests tonight include Tactical Revolution maker Battlefield Gear, and that's the name of Tactical Revolution, maker Battlefield Gear, and ATS Tactical Gear, who will discuss changes in the battlefield tactics and getting the Red Cross out of our helicopters. So, with that all said, Paul, I'll give you the last word, and then we'll take it on out, and Jill will be taking over the show here within a few minutes, and you don't want to miss her and her guests.
No, definitely not, and we're going to continue on. I know I've been out of pocket in honoring the fallen, unfortunately. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq claimed the lives of more than 450 Americans, and that brought the U.S. death toll to more than 6,300 since 2001. I came across a link on Military Times, and I will be pulling people out of this article to, you know, remember them. Army Sergeant Paul J. Ateem, who died April 17, 2011, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. He was from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and he was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 32nd Infantry Regiment, 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 10th Mountain Division from Fort Drum, New York. He died of wounds suffered April the 16th in Amid Khan, Afghanistan, when insurgents attacked his unit with an improvised explosive device. Also killed were Specialist Charles J. Wren and PFC Joel Ramirez. It was in his second deployment to Afghanistan that this young man was killed, when he and two other men were killed in Nimros province. The soldiers were with the 1st Battalion. They all deployed the prior month. The gentleman leaves behind a child and is survived by his mother, according to the Defense Department. He was a native of Uganda, and he attended the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay for 2 semesters in the fall of 2005 and the spring of 2006. He came to the United States from Uganda in pursuit of a better life, and shortly afterward joined the military to serve the country he loved, said Brett Bronick, Director of International Education at the school. I think I speak for the entire university community in extending condolences to his family and friends. Blahnik said he remembers a team as being outgoing and having a good sense of humor. In 2006, a team married Sarah Wall of Alouez, and they had one child. He joined the Army in November of 2006, completing training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and was assigned to Fort Benning, Georgia, and Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He transferred to Fort Drum, New York, in December 2010. He had been deployed to Afghanistan from April 2009 to April 2010. His awards and decorations include 2 Army Achievement Medals, the Meritorious Unit Commendation, the Army Good Conduct Medal, the National Defense Service Medal, the Army Commendation Medal, the Global War on Terrorist Service Medal, the Army Service Ribbon, and the Overseas Service Ribbon. He had also completed the Army's Warrior Leadership and Combat Lifesavers courses. I will read another 5 names from the list. Rafael Rodriguez Aruda, 21, Paul Jeddah Dean, 27, Jeffrey Annual Osborne, 41, Brian John Backus, 21, and Cody Glenn Baker, 19. To the individuals serving overseas, specifically in Afghanistan, your families love and miss you and want you home real soon.
Wow. Well, thanks, Paula. That's awesome. All right. We are out of time. We are going to turn it over to Jill Trammell and her Patriot Promotions Hour. Thanks for joining us tonight. Stick around for Jill's show. You don't want to miss it. And Paula, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Wonderful.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Hi, and thanks for joining us on the American Hour. This is Jill Trammell, and I'm hoping you'll stay tuned with me while we wait for our guest. Hold on, please. Having a little bit of technical difficulties, so hold on with me. There it is. Hi, it's Jill. Is anyone joining me? Is there a caller?
Yeah, it's me, Jill.
Oh, great. Good. Okay, we're live. I had some trouble, you know, logging into the studio. One of the wonderful things about Blog Talk Radio is that we can pretty much do our show anytime we want, as long as it's within the hours that, you know, we're accustomed to using it. But if you can't log into the studio, you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Nate, right?
Yes.
Hey, Nate, do we have Dan with us yet?
I don't know.
I don't hear him, and I don't see him on the line. Well, let's get started. Nate, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and Tactical Revolution, your company?
Well, I come from an Army background, 13 years in the United States Army, medic primarily, various different jobs, worked with 82nd, 7th Special Forces, pretty much anybody let me work for them. A lot of movement around, 15 moves in my 13 years in the military, a lot of bouncing around. Primarily, I did a lot of activity with the forward surgical team, with them through the Aztecs team, so that kept me pretty busy. Now I work for TACREV. I'm the COO of Tactical Revolution. Basically, what we are is a group of three guys who do R&D and tactical kind of R&D for companies like MSG, Loco Boots, and that kind of thing.
And what do you do for them?
Well, for Loco Boots, we have one of our boot designs came out this year. It's the new hot weather mountain hiker that's been debuted this year and a contract with the United States Army for that. And so what we look at is new and innovative ways of basically making tech for the military, using that tech at a personal level. We'll test it out ourselves. We'll find guys that we know in actual battle situations that can actually test and utilize that equipment and then come back and tell us what they think. On top of that, you know, between Will, Dan, and I, we've got over 40 years of military experience and understanding. And so between the three of us, we can basically say if we feel something's going to work or not, and bounce that off each other and then go from a starting point to a product that actually will hopefully eventually get produced and end up in use in the military branches.
Wow, that's really cool. So these boots, like, are they good for the troops when they're, you know, trudging through snow in places like Afghanistan?
Yeah, this
is that
one
they
particularly
would be
is – yeah, this one particularly I don't know, in a hiking situation, sometimes you're given equipment that is kind of multi-purpose. So it may be a boot that's more kind of geared towards kind of all terrain. But when you're talking about hot weather climate in the mountains, you need a lightweight boot that doesn't get hot. The boots that the military currently had in use, the soldiers' feet got too hot in the boots during the summer, worked perfectly in the winter. But during the summer, it was just not adequate for them. It was too hot, too heavy, and in the long run, caused injuries to the soldier and affected their feet. And anybody knows the military marches on their feet. So Wilco partnered with Tactical Revolution to create this new boot that is specifically designed for hot weather mountain hiking.
Wow, very cool. What else does Wilco do?
Wow, I wish Will was on the phone right now. They're the guys that invented the jungle boot.
Okay.
Which was the staple. Jungle boot?
No, Wilco.
Oh, Wilco. Oh, I think it's W-E-L-L-C-O.
Okay, C-O, right?
Yes.
Or T. Welcome. Yeah, see. Okay, welcome boots. There it is. First thing that came up. Oh, cool. All right, yep, I see it. Jungle boots, desert boots, and more. So they are a boot company for the most part.
Most part, and they are the guys that had invented the jungle boot, which, you know, when I was at Bragg, when I wasn't in 82nd jump boots, I was in jungle boots. They're lightweight. really efficient for everyday terrain. Just an excellent boot, and I know guys that still have them in their closet and use them today, even though they're not issue anymore. Just a real innovative new boot that, you know, I believe was back in the 60s or 70s when they created that. So Welco's come a long ways.
I'm looking at their website, and it's all very interesting. Like, they have some beautiful graphics, and the boot itself is very good-looking boot. I can imagine, I mean, this isn't something that you would picture as a military-issued boot. It's a pretty good-looking boot. I'd wear it.
Yeah. Maybe we can get you a pair of something. another thing that's on the new Welco boot design that we did is, I believe it's called Shark Skin. And it's a rigid, thin fiber type material that is tough and durable. And it's put in the areas in the heel and on the toe to prevent wear and tear. And in the areas where, you know, when you're a soldier, you're going to be kneeling down, crawling through the mud, dirt and rocks, getting in like hasty positions for battle fight, that kind of thing. So it's meant to provide an extra wear and tear on that boot. I believe Welco boots are some of the best boots for wear. I mean, you can barely break the jokers in. They fit perfectly when you wear them. You get the right fitting, and they just will last you a long, long, long time.
Great. Well, it looks like a really nice product. I think we have another caller on the line. Is this Dan? Hey, Dan, are you with us? Okay, they were joking. I got a caller, and now they're not there. Well, besides Welco and boots, are there any other particular items that you guys have developed that you can share with us?
Hello?
Hey, sorry, is this Dan?
Are you hearing me or?
Hey, okay, yeah, I'm hearing. Nope. I'm hearing one of you and not the other. Okay, I should hear everybody.
All right.
Who's on the line with me?
This is not Dan.
I'm Nathan.
Okay. Hi. Give us your name, caller.
Benjamin.
Oh, it's Ben. Hey, Ben.
How are you?
We're hanging out. I'm good. Are you still driving up to CPAC?
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
what kind of boots were you guys talking about there? I came in on some kind of boots.
Tell him about it, Nate. Ben didn't hear
it
the last part about Welco.
Okay, it's the new hot weather mountain hiker that we partnered with Welco to produce.
All right. Yeah,
man,
I got big, black, ugly, nasty. Hurting. Well, they look like flesh potatoes at the end of my leg. And good boots with good arch support really mean a lot to me.
Yeah, Welco is a really good company as far as like good, comfortable, reliable boots. The key is they basically wear to your foot. And you know, like any good boot should. They're perfect for. The boot that you're going to wear into, and it'll last you a good long time. Really tough, durable boot. The neat thing about this one is it's light, and it wicks the water away, and it's perfect for that hot kind of hiking climate.
So, like jungle boot.
Yeah, it's really kind of a hybridized jungle boot. It's a whole new level of jungle boot. You know, kind of years ago, back in the early 90s, mid 90s, when they came out with the high techs. And some guys started wearing them in the military. Of course, the military, you know, they don't like you wearing stuff that's not an issue, right? This will actually be an issue boot to soldiers.
Oh, okay, that's cool. You know, spec op community, it's whatever works, you wear it just as long as you win and they lose. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember we got to submit. Every year, I think it was every year, twice a year, you can submit items of gear
the review that the military would look at, and then they'd make a buy if they saw it as useful, cost effective, and they would issue it to the rest of the team as issued gear, good pocket knives and good dive boots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's a market for it.
Yeah, there is a market for it.
Is.
The question is how fast can they get it to you? You know, that's the thing. How fast can they get it to you when you actually develop a product that the troops need? And, you know, you're working in private industry, and let's say you come across something that is life-saving or is absolutely was needed yesterday. How difficult is it, would you say, Nate, to get those products to our special forces and to the troops when they are developed and they're already in theater?
Well, it can be pretty difficult because, you know, there's a lot of competition. There's not just one boot company out there that's making a product. There's all kinds of different companies biting and bidding for those lucrative opportunities to produce boots for the military or equipment for the military. I remember years ago when Leatherman came out with that Leatherman multi-purpose tool, and they found their ways into issue in special forces, and then shortly thereafter, within the United States military, to different units for use for the military. So it does take a while for some of that tech to reach your everyday military units, but a lot of that stuff is tested and fielded for its practical application in special forces and special operation teams. So they tend to see that stuff first, and then it slowly trickles into the rest of the military. But sometimes it takes years to get a good product there.
In 2001, right when I got to the teams, 4 days after, 4 days after my training was 9/11, then immediately I was, at my first platoon. And, not too long after getting there, I remember, Under Armour just unloaded everything they had, and they were still brand new. They gave us, just tons of shirts, and otherwise it was just that cotton. And, cotton, in hiking and mountaineering and survival, the term is cotton kills. And, it took us a while to figure out, though, once we started getting hit with IVs, that the Under Armour shirts turn into just, melted plastic on your body, and it's nasty. But
it's horrible.
It feels good before that.
Yeah. And there, that's actually a project that PacRev we're working on, bringing products like Under Armour that have that wicking property, but have that added benefit of it's not going to melt to you when you get hot. Fireproofing and bringing that to your regular military. So we're working with a bunch of different companies, Dry Fire for one. Products that are just, fit perfect, work perfect, and can be applied to everyday military use. It's got to be practical.
So this,
you know what I mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely. So Jill was telling me that this is the I Love Obama chat.
I'm trying to stay semi-politically correct. I've been asked to tone it down by a friend of mine recently who is up for a particular contract, and I said, okay, I'll do my best. So I
said, so you call him boss.
I said mister. No, I said mister. I put mister in front of it. Other than that, I don't change much. So, I just wanted to say, let me introduce Ben a little to Nate and the listeners, if anyone's listening right now. Ben is former Navy SEAL, also somebody who I highly respect in that he took an oath to defend our homeland as well as overseas, and I truly believe that he is one of the few folks I know who is still doing that on a daily basis. He's also one of the leadership for the campaign of Ilario Pantano in North Carolina, who's running for Congress, Republican running for Congress. And he's also, Ilario is a former Marine, and I'll let Ben give him a plug here in a minute and tell you a little bit about him. But they are on their way to CPAC tonight, and I just want to kind of divert for a minute and tell Ben about the conversation I had on the phone just prior to coming on the show tonight, which put me a little, I was a little discombobulated getting into the studio tonight, but we were also switching hosts, and you can only have one host on the air at a time, so... So Ben calls me and tells me that, you know, they're what's going on, check the internet or whatever, what's your intel on the whole Occupy movement up there at CPAC, and I knew that it was heating up. So I called a friend who is embedded in Homeland Security type programs and issues, and got the whole thumbs up that, oh yeah, it's all, everything's all cool, it's all taken care of, and no worries, they expect this, and apparently there's been not so much, I wouldn't say threats, but information and intel that have come to different folks that are saying that they don't want to just be peacefully protesting because the city actually denied their request. They tried to get permits.
They denied the occupiers' request?
Yes. Yes, they denied their permits, many of them.
I just wanted to also tell you that Joel is also in on the call right now.
Hi, Joel.
I
might not be able to hear him, but he said, hi, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, keep going.
Okay, so a bunch of their permits were denied, and they got some feedback on that. But they have ramped up security in order to take care of any of the difficult people that might show up. At the same time, I called folks on the inside that had some, at a high level, that were dealing with the very large crowd that is inside tonight, as well as the group of leadership, which is much greater than last year and the year before. Additionally, it's my understanding that the administration is much younger this year than it was last year. And with that being said, possibly a little bit less less experienced about how these things roll. And, they had a lot of problems last year with GoProud, people not wanting GoProud to be a part of it. So they did ramp up internal security, and yet they are glad to know that Ben and Joel are on their way.
All right,
and they
that,
know how to get a
hold
of
them. Keep that on the down low.
I'm kidding. But, yeah, they're fine. They're all there. And they just expect everyone to keep an eye out for any troublesome folks and to get them thrown out quickly. So plenty of security at CPAC this year. I mean, it's just a sad state when – you know, you have to deny protesters because of the cost that they incur from allowing them to camp out and just wreak havoc on our cities.
Yeah.
I think the biggest issue with the occupiers is it's not about getting their voice heard. I understand, you know, I totally respect and I would fight for the freedom of speech for anyone. I don't care who they are. But when their freedom of speech becomes a protest, an agenda that goes against values of what America's about, and stealing and pulling people in a direction that decays the moral fiber of who we are as Americans, that's where I have to draw the line. I just, you know, I know I'm a tech rev guy and we make equipment for soldiers, but I have real strong opinions about what America should be. And how we should carry ourselves as Americans here and abroad.
Right.
Absolutely. And also, if you look on their website, if you look on Occupy's website, it's not really anything that has to do with freedom of speech, any of your amendments. There are connections to Communist Party USA. It says it there. Also, if you look within on their website, their goals and their directives of what they want to achieve is they want, like, one of the first things is they want to get rid of sovereignty of land ownership. They want to get rid of your right to own what you own, property, land. There's ties to Muslim Brotherhood, Communist Party USA, David Duke is in there too. I mean, it's just a cornucopia of all the dirty scumbags you've ever run across in your life. It's abhorrent. And the thing is, you see media letting it happen. There's been how many deaths? There's been about 14 rapes. There's been 1,700 people arrested, and my numbers aren't exactly correct, but they're pretty dang close because I just was looking at it. You know, they're sitting there, they're crapping on cop cars. They're, you know, urine and defecation filled, you know, tents and stuff like that. They have to have rape-proof rooms. Do you see that at the Tea Party? And you saw the media starting to, you know, label us as, you know, Nazis and the bad people, whereas these people don't have anything to do with anything American. This game of past president has endorsed them. It's a scary thing in America.
Hey, Ben, you're cutting out. But let me ask you. Hey, Ben, you're cutting out. But I was just thinking, is it Occupy.us, their official website? Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
It is? Occupy.us? You got to wonder.
Occupy DC is the specific one for this event.
Okay, so Occupy.us, it looks like, and then they have, Occupy.us. Yeah, it's a little disconcerting. I mean, they basically have their Twitter role is talking about, please deposit $50 for an additional hour of protesting. So they're just making the most of everything they're trying to do here with the, Occupy Philly and Occupy LA were both put on notice by the police that the time had come for them to vacate the parks. You know, they're just playing on the fact that, so the police and, you know, the government is shutting them down, don't want them to talk. They don't have anything on here in regards to, you know, if they ever had any success at their movements. It's just a whole bunch of propaganda. And I see the anonymous figure. You guys familiar with the anonymous face?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Okay, is that their official figure? Do you know?
Yes.
That whole thing comes from anarchy movement.
Which is
a lot of it is, you know, like, have you ever heard of a fire sale where they try to shut down electrical power, banking, police, I mean, everything in one day and really cause just mass hysteria and chaos? That's who they are. And this whole concept isn't new. I mean, this goes all the way back. This is exactly what Hitler did to take over Germany. He was a socialist party, you know, and it's exactly the same thing.
All right, I'm starting to like you more past the whole poop comment and stuff like that.
You know, I only know the nice guys. I'm telling you. Yeah, and Nate's a subject matter expert as well.
Yay.
Yeah, their title here is, you got to love this. You got the anonymous figure with the red, white, and blue, you know, you can Obama yourself on Facebook and other places. When you Obama yourself, you get that red, white, and blue background. And his says, Mr. President, we hope. And hope in the large words that you're on our side, and so while they don't completely connect themselves in any other way here, they do. Here's the politics page. It's very clear that this is a far liberal agenda, and to be honest, Occupy the Public Mind that I just clicked on, it has, to be honest, zero tweets, zero shares, zero likes. So, you know, the mainstream media is doing nothing but fueling these folks, and yet I think the majority of us realize that they are a joke.
Well, no, hold on a second. But if you bring it back to Leninist Russia, you bring it back to the Russian Revolution, the French Revolution, you bring it back to Kristallnacht and the Weimar Republic, it's the 10%.
Yeah.
It's those people who run the country. You know, it's like voting. Who wins? Just whoever shows up to vote. It's not about getting... They have the media. They have these apparatus. They have the White House. You know, it's not about...
Mm-hmm.
The silent majority is a silent majority for a reason. They're silent. And mm-hmm. the thing is, they've basically educated the sleeping giant out of us. So when we wake up, you know, we're not going to have any muscle. We're just going to be weak and we'll be enslaved. If we let this election get by without, you know, mobilizing the silent majority,
right.
if we still have it.
Right. Well, with that being said, Ben, let me ask you.
What scares me is in Cambodia, they did the same kind of movement. They basically turned their government over, and then what fell after that were millions of murders, but specifically to the educated population. You know, they didn't go into the streets and kill the farmers. They killed the doctors, the lawyers, the people who had enough education to say, hey, this isn't going to work. Any kind of opposition that would have occurred out of sound philosophical understanding was just shut down because they murdered them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and let me just say that I had a very interesting, like I said, some interesting conversations right before I got on the show tonight, and with some folks that are very dialed into politics in the D.C. area, and these are people that have been in politics for the last 40, 50 years, and their families are, you know, they are the 1% that you think don't have a clue when it comes to politics. Maybe not financially, but in politics, there is a 1%. And, you know, most of the time they occupy D.C. And it was very disheartening to hear that the folks that used to be part of the GOP establishment, and they were the establishment. They helped create the establishment from the time of Reagan, for the most part. I mean, credited with these things. And to see that they are concerned about the Republican Party right now simply because both Mitt and Newt have smeared each other and the media has smeared each other enough that they're both giving us concern that they're not going to be able to stand up against Obama, who is, you know, constantly working the press, constantly working Hollywood, constantly working anything that's big in this country to his side. And there's nothing that he's going to do or say purposefully, other than his policies that we can call him on, that is going to make him look bad. And there's been things that have come out about Mitt that could be used against him that we haven't seen yet. There's things that, you know, everybody says they love Newt, which I'll be one of them, in that he's just a brilliant, brilliant mind. And his writing and his belief system is very congruent with how he speaks and debates. Well, it can be, but the Santorum is what they're saying, is they're turning back. Now that Santorum's won 3 states, they're saying, okay, the independents are speaking. Now the rest of us need to get behind Santorum.
You need to stick to your values. I mean, Romney,
well,
the thing is, you don't really change your views at 50 years old, your core views on, say, abortion or gun control or
that's,
you know, any
not
other
the issue anymore. Yeah. But that's not the issue. It's about who can beat Obama. Who can beat Obama? That's what the issue is. Everybody's saying that's the deal.
No. Then you have sold out your beliefs. This is the primaries. You vote for who is the best candidate, and then you make
correct.
That person beat Obama. Because if you go for the half-assed whatever you think can beat Obama, which is Romney or Newt, they are both morally, I'd vote for them. I'd vote for a pen, a shoe, a nail clipper. But the thing is, it's that they are very amoeba-like, semi-shifty in their views. They're politically expedient. You know that on a debating floor, actually you see Santorum would beat him right now, hands down. I think I saw a poll, but the thing is, the polls, it depends on who they say. They say 95% of Catholics are for abortion now, which, you know, it's who's given out the poll. But with Santorum, as Cain would have, Santorum up there on the stage, you would be able to silhouette Obama and his views. Obamacare, that would sink Romney. They're wanting Romney. That's why the media hasn't been mentioning Romney or trying to sink him. Cain was at the head of the polls. Fox News wouldn't even mention them. They're trying to give you your candidate. And Santorum, they don't even ask him questions in the debates. And the media that is not standing for the people against the government, they're standing for the government against the people, as, you know, the mainstream media, the lefty media, you know, they're dictating who gets the questions and who answers them. And they're not even paying attention to them when they win the polls. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing to see. And plus, also, you see in the past few days, I mean, even Rush Limbaugh was just, he's baffled by even just seeing the way that, you know, the state of the world is right now. And the big thing is, in the news, if you, like, you see so much going on with all these debates and the political wrangling, do you see any news on the rest of the world, our southern border, what's going on in the Middle East? They may just throw a 15-second clip at it, but the thing we should be looking at is what's going on in the world while we're just paying attention to the tree in front of us. We're not looking at the forest. We're not looking at the 30,000 feet. We're looking at our toes. I'm just saying. I don't know.
You're right. I mean, I was encouraged, actually, to hear that somebody from that I used to think was establishment had turned Tea Party, who's now turned to Santorum. And to me, it was encouraging because independent thinkers are going to do what they believe in, exactly what they believe in. And when we're dealing with a primary, we are thinking about things like, well, who can beat Obama? Who is it that can hold the media's attention and not give them an excuse to destroy them? And with the state of the media today, that's a very big problem. And apparently there are things that have not come out about Mitt Romney that they put into a perspective of how can you vote for somebody if they put this on TV with a split screen. One dog riding on top of the car on a family trip and the other one in a limousine hanging out the window with his ears blowing in the wind. Which one would you vote for? Drivers. The drivers of the car. Okay? So with that being said, it doesn't take a whole lot to smear a candidate. And we need one that has, I mean, Newt has all the skeletons out for the most part. That's one good thing about Newt. You already know what you're getting. He is what he is. But we're not crazy about him. We respect him. And we understand that he's been through several administrations as a politician, but he did work well with Clinton once they finally got their groove on. I mean, 2 years, it was nothing but, severe problems, but after that, they got their groove on and got some things done. So we know he can be a politician. We know he can do a job with both sides. At the same time, we also know that he may not be the character that the majority of Americans are looking for. And in my opinion, and here's a woman in me speaking, then I'll probably piss off every single woman out there, but it's my opinion that most powerful men, especially ones in politics, they cannot stay faithful for long. Their egos are so big that that's something that feeds it, and they seem to thrive on it. So I almost don't expect it anymore, and I hate to say that as a conservative woman, but that's kind of the last thing I worry about when I vote. I'd rather know that he can work a bipartisan Congress and Senate than to worry about what he's doing behind closed doors. Is that wrong?
See my opinion is I don't want to vote for a guy who wants to be the president. I have problems with that because it's become such an ego fill for them that it's all about the title and becoming the president. I would rather vote for a farmer who can grab a pitchfork and start shoveling the crap out of our government that's screwing everything up and actually do some work and focus on what needs to happen to get our country back to what our Constitution meant it to be. The further we go from our Constitution, the further we go from what we are as Americans. And that puts what I think is the whole world at jeopardy.
I agree. The problem I see is that every farmer you put in there, and Ben, I'm going to let you comment on this in regards to the Tea Party, okay? Every farmer you put in there who doesn't have experience on the Hill, they end up feeling it. The minute they get there, they're like, oh, my God, what am I? I'm here, and this is overwhelming, and they've got people coming at them who are highly experienced politicians and officials and the Pentagon, and these people are coming at them from every single direction, telling them what to do. They end up caving to the fact that of their inexperience, and it takes somebody who is who understands that at some level, and we've never elected a president, as far as I know, and tell me if I'm wrong, who is completely inexperienced like that, straight off the spot. Well, Jimmy Carter, right? No. So, yeah, we've got to have folks that have some understanding of the political system and how it works, and it is ugly up there now. Can you imagine walking into something like that, and you won't even know if the things that you want to do will be compromised, period. You have to expect that when you get in there, based on unknowns that you don't even understand until you get there. There's so many things that go on behind the scenes and behind the curtains that you become privy to that when you go with an agenda, it changes often because of information that the public doesn't even know. So someone like Newt is encouraging to me because he's been there, done that, and he's been able to make strides, and he is a constitutionalist.
Yeah, but I want to draw your attention to this. Now, Obama doesn't see himself being unseated for now. But the thing is, do you agree? I just want to give you a read on this. Would you agree with me that there has been a huge power shift towards the executive branch, towards the presidency of the United States? That they can do executive vote, and there's a lot of power, and Congress is almost being circumvented towards the power of the president.
Oh, completely.
Yes?
He's doing it all the time.
Okay.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Now, but with that, if the president that comes in, if we win, look at Newt. He's politically expedient. He's very powerful. He's egotistical. He's got a temper. Now, at this point, when Obama gets kicked out, whoever comes in, Obama, even before we get to the elections, he wants to. Did you see the interview on the Super Bowl? He wanted to get rid of the stopping blocks that the founders put into the Constitution, into our government, as well as the State of the Union, where he's asking Congress to grant him the authority to streamline the bureaucracy of government so it could go faster with the wants and the needs of society, and so he can do his job. That is exactly why we created the government the way we did. Okay. Now, that being said, the fact of the matter is, if Newt gets in, he's in a very tenuous spot at that moment. He, with judging on his character, would he return the power to the people? Would he return the amendments that have been taken from us, the Fourth Amendment via Patriot Act, the Third and the Fifth via the NDAA, and the health Section 5201 of the Health Care Act, which establishes the Ready Reserve? Would he pull those back, or would he use them to continue the march that Obama was on, but with a little bit of a Republican flair on it? But out and out, he's progressive. He is a progressive, big government person, and that's what I don't like about him. I think if he got in, he would continue the march, as even as much as, you know, conservatives get on me about this, as George Bush had progressive inklings. Government got bigger under him. I think Newt would definitely fall victim to the drunkenness of power and continue us in the march down the road towards oblivion. Just a possible scenario.
That is a possible scenario. That's a good doomsday scenario for sure. I don't think I believe it though, Ben.
My friend,
I'm starting to like Ben.
Oh, Nate, you and Ben together with the zombie apocalypse script is just golden. Bring it to me.
I'll tell you what, I was writing a book which was gonna go towards a screenplay, and the thing is, I had the big overarching storylines and some of the other stuff, but Joe, we've actually spoken about this. And the thing is, most of it has been coming true, and it's coming true faster than I thought it would be. Like, I wanted it to be close to reality to kind of, you know, provoke thought. But I think you'll see it in reality before you'll see it in the bookshelf.
Wow.
Zombies.
Yeah, you know. Zombies are nothing compared to that, I know. Well, I don't know. I think that for the most part, from what I've heard Newt say and what I've heard him read, I'm just going to pony up and tell everybody that I saw him here in Naples, and I took Martha Zoller, who is like one of my favorite people on the planet. She's a radio talk show host. She's a defense expert. She was allowed in the green zone. I think she's the first radio personality allowed in the green zone. And she hangs with folks that, you know, got Ronald Reagan elected. And I just think she hung the moon for the most part. She's running for Congress in my old hometown area of Gainesville, Georgia. And she has known Newt, obviously, from Georgia and other folks that I've run into. And so I bring this book, which is, I mean, just a great book. It's called Indivisible. And it's basically about how the majority of Americans are center to the right in their values, belief systems, and the way that we live our lives. And so I bring it up. I bring it to Naples, the Hilton, where he shows up in a very impromptu gathering, and I end up being kind of one of the last people in the room. And I give him the book, and I said, you know, will you sign my book? And he's like, oh, it's Martha's book. And I kind of knew they were friends. And so we started talking. And next thing you know, he's bringing me to the communications gal that he had traveling with him and saying, you know, put Jill on our list. She does social media. She knows these people, that blah, 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 blah. So I get a call. And I'm just going to tell you how campaigning is all – this is just such a big deal. And I had this conversation with my previous friend on the phone. Campaigning is really a big deal. And how you do it and how you go about it. And I truly believe that our party in general has lost a lot of the military vote, and that pains me to see what traditionally has been folks in the red in the military turn to the left. And yet I understand.
You know why
it
that is, Jill?
I do.
I'll tell you why that is.
Okay.
When I was in the military, and Ben can probably agree with me on this, is you're a lower enlisted. And your NCO or your boss comes to you, and he just throws you to the wind like cannon fodder. And you tell yourself, when I get to that range, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm not going to do what my boss did. And then you find yourself getting there, and you have a choice. You're either going to do the right thing and be that NCO or that officer that you said you were going to be, or you're not going to be that person. You're going to be exactly what your boss was. And in politics, soldiers who look at a guy that says, when I become the president, I'm going to do the opposite of that. Or when I become Congress, I'm going to do the opposite. And they get into an elected position, and they do exactly the opposite of what they said they were going to do. To the military, to us, that is a slap in the face, because you told me you were going to do that. You had honor, and you have a lack of honor. And the military takes that very, very abrupt turn as a lack of character. Am I right? And,
yes.
And we just have a hard time with it. You know,
see
a guy that says, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to take care of our country, and I'm going to put us back on track. And then I see them throwing people to the wind like cannon fodder, or completely going in the opposite direction of what they told us they were going to do, and they're not conservative. They're more midlined, and they're pulling us in a direction that it isn't what we wanted to, but it's getting them what they wanted. I just have a hard time with that. Do what you're going to say you're going to do, or get out of the way.
Right. Well, we lost Ben. He dropped the call because he was driving. But I know for a fact, I mean, being a SEAL, there is a lot of honor involved. And I've learned that working with you guys in the military. I mean, I'm not military. I grew up with military. My next-door neighbor was a bird colonel, and his sons are in the military. One out of them right now is continually serving as an Army Reserve colonel. And you know, I know the military issues, plus working with VeteranCaregiver.com and all the veteran nonprofits that I work with. I've done that, you know, I've been on the street with the veterans. And the older veterans, I mean, we're talking World War II to today, I've heard all kinds of stories. And to the point where I will never stop doing what I'm doing because I'm impassioned by it. And part of that is the fact that our government is not promised, they're promising you all when you go in, the stars and the moon, for the most part. But when you actually have to utilize the services that they're promising, you're not getting what you need. And that, to me, is worth fighting for. I believe that our military men and women should be getting the best health care in the country, that you should not have to worry about if you survive a war. You know, I'm sorry, but can I kiss your feet or wash them for you? Because thank you very much. I'm not fighting the war. The war is not on my home front, and I'm not sitting here with my auto rifles waiting for someone to come and, you know, bust into my house. I don't want to live that way. So I thank our men and women and our law enforcement. But the rest of the country doesn't feel that way.
The reason our government can't provide for the military like they promised is because at the same time they're promising to the men and women who are going to sacrifice and lay down their lives for our country to protect our Constitution, to protect our way of life. At the same time they do that, they promise to people who are unwilling to do anything the same thing. And our government law was never meant to be philanthropic. We were never meant to have pity or mercy on people who are unwilling to work and take care of themselves. But yet we've become a government that looks at the weak and the unwilling and says, we have to take care of them. That is not meant for the government. And a government that takes on the responsibility of trying to bandage the broken and the unwilling, that government's going to fail. That should be the responsibility of private, nonprofit organizations taking care of people out of the goodness of their heart, not philanthropic law. It doesn't work.
Right. Right. And I think the bottom line is that business has to thrive in order for philanthropy to thrive. We've proven that. As business has declined, as our economy has declined, our nonprofit networks and our the giving levels have declined. And, you know, I think the other big problem now is that a lot of the smaller organizations have had to become increasingly more professional, and the cost involved and the overhead involved in becoming that organization has exponentially increased. So many small groups don't ever get seen or heard, and that's
is something that I've always felt strongly about. I've always felt strongly about helping those groups get some exposure and some promotions. But at the same time, I'd rather work with folks who are stable and who have the ability to build their capacity, okay, rather than those who have built their capacity of presence versus their capacity of serving. In other words, their brand is more important than the number of people they serve.
Yeah, yeah. If you join the military and you serve your country, the government is doing service for you, medical care and all that, because you upheld an oath to defend our country. You've earned that. To me, there's a difference between earning something and taking that for free. And whenever we have an imbalance where we're giving out more than what we're taking in, you cannot balance the budget. We need to have a president who comes in and stops all the brakes on everything and says, look, we cannot continue to do this if we are going to do this. And the most important thing to me, being military, is not drawing back our military, not drawing back our expenses and our R&D for defense. Because the priority of our government, our federal government, is to protect our country, our way of life. And when we think as a government, it's more important to take care of people who are unwilling to work and unwilling to take care of themselves and get out there and bust their butt to take care of their family, then we're going to have some serious problems in the next 20, 30 years. We're going to implode on ourselves in such a way that we're not going to be able to take care of who we are as an entity in itself. We're no longer going to be America.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting. Well, I'll just tell you this. Back when I was studying psychology for the first time in college, I remember one of my courses went to the Capitol, and we were approached by folks that were working for the Health and Human Services Department, and they basically laid it out as this. If you have children in the school system, that basically your teachers are social workers. Your counselors are conduits to the state system, and your principals are overloaded, and, you know, they're not going to be much help to you. But literally the social workers in this world who work in all these different state-funded programs truly are some of our heroes, and they don't get enough credit for what they do. If we could just somehow streamline our systems that have been in place for years, downsize some, like the Department of Education, while increasing others, like Health and Human Services, without expanding the welfare, without expanding social systems, and also increase the ability of the economy to bring back manufacturing, to allow us to have tax breaks so that we can deal with our employees and not feel like we're draining ourselves with all the extra tax burdens that we have as employers, then we might have some luck in the future. But truly, I try to keep hope, and I know you do too, Nate, and I know Ben does as well, but at the same time, we see the decline and we hear it. So as we leave tonight, because we're about to go off the air, I just want to thank you guys for calling in, and I hope that we can have more conversation on how we can help save our troops in the field with TACREV and Dan and Will, who are missing from us tonight. And we look forward to speaking with all you on the call-in number next week at Tuesday at, what time is it, Nate? What time do you want to go
o'clock,
on?
8 o'clock, I believe.
8 o'clock next Tuesday? All right. 8 o'clock next Tuesday night. We'll see you then. Thanks, everyone.
You bet. Bye-bye.
You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA.